What is up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 418, and our podcast is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and have it and purchase something, that gives us a little kickback and keeps the podcast ongoing. Of course, with me, as you can see on the screen next to me, is my wonderful co-host Ryan.
What's going on? Wonderful, huh?
Yeah.
Not much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of stuff going on in the background there?
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of products. I have a video coming up with some really interesting products. I posted one of those products on our Twitter accounts, little screen. I got some cool stuff, but okay. I got a lot of it. I have a lot of it here because it's very inexpensive. But it's all computer related stuff that we're going to be checking out. So that is all stuff that's being worked on. So
there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. But we have a bunch of stuff going on. It's extremely hot in this room because my air conditioning sucks. So if you see the shirt getting darker, it's because I'm sweating through the shirt. So hopefully that's not the case. I have a little.
I'm at 70 degrees in here right now.
It is. This is going to be backwards, I think, but it is.
Oh, 80.
Yeah. Woo! 80. No way.
Almost 81.
Yeah. And the thing is that I just had like a little portable air conditioner running.
Yeah.
So this will probably get up to 82. It gets up sometimes, like if I'm not working in here and I come in here and I look at it, it gets up to like 84.
That's wild.
Yeah.
No thanks.
So imagine trying to shoot video or, you know, record without sweating through your shirt.
Yeah.
No thanks. But we're doing the podcast. Lots of stuff to talk about this week. New Ryzen reviews came out today. Kind of just like last week. We talked about the sort of mid-range offerings from AMD on the Ryzen 9000 series. We're going to be talking about the high-end offerings now, and it's kind of the same thing, which we will get into. Really cool product that I took a look at this week, and I learned a lot while reviewing it as well. So let's just jump right in. Of course, everybody, if you want to follow along, or if you're listening later and you hear us talk about something, we have a full show notes page that's right here that has everything that we're going to be talking about this week, links to everything. You can get it all right here. So let's just jump right in and talk about the review. So I don't often take a look at networking products, but probably over the last 6 months, we've heard a lot of Wi-Fi 7. We've seen all the newer motherboards have Wi-Fi 7. All the new laptops have Wi-Fi 7. So Asus wanted us to check out one of their Wi-Fi 7 routers. And I learned a lot. I learned the difference between Wi-Fi 6E and Wi-Fi 7, which a lot of people probably don't know. So the big differences between Wi-Fi 6E and Wi-Fi 7 is that they both give you 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz, and 6 gigahertz, except for Wi-Fi 7 is going to give you faster speeds. On top of that, you get multi-link operation, so it can connect to different bands, sending data back and forth. You also have wider bandwidth as well. So a lot of different technologies kind of built into Wi-Fi 7 that makes it better. I think the big thing that a lot of people care about is that it's faster. You're just going to get faster throughput.
It's kind of what you expect.
Yeah. So that's kind of the big thing. And Wi-Fi 7 hardware in general is not cheap, especially when it comes to routers and things like that. So this router that we're taking a look at is in that category. It is quite expensive, but it's a way to sort of future-proof your home network if that's what you plan to do. So it is the RTBE96U. Like I said, it is a tri-band Wi-Fi 7 router. And as you can take a look, it's a beast. It is big. It is a big router. It's going to take up a lot of space wherever you put it. And unfortunately, like I'm sure you know, Ryan, like a lot of routers have holes in the bottom where you can wall mount it.
Yeah.
This doesn't have any of that. So you can't wall mount this either.
I don't know if I want that hanging on my wall anyways.
Like, it would kind of
look like mistake it as a coat rack or something.
Yeah, that's true. It's big. It's very, very big. And like I said, the design is it's just we've seen all these like massive routers. I mean, they're really big. On the front there, you can see we have our activity LEDs for everything. An LED button that turns everything off. So if you're if you have this in a bedroom or something, you don't want those LEDs flashing. You can hit that button, turn it off. And of course, you have your dedicated WPS button for easy connection. And then as far as connections go, you have two 10 gig LAN ports here. So you have one over here. This is a downstream port. And then you have this one right here, which by default is your WAN port. So you're thinking, oh, well, I only get one 10 gig LAN, but you can reconfigure one of these to be your WAN if you want two downstream 10 gig LAN ports. And then you have four regular 1 gig LAN ports on this. And then you have both USB 2.0 and USB 3.0. They're type A. So you can use this for file storage. You can use this for updates. You can use this to tether a phone, which is really cool. So say you're, you know, your internet goes out. It happens to all of us. It's happened to everybody at least once. Your internet goes out, but you still have cell phone signal. You can actually, you know, with your included USB that comes, you know, or like any new phone, like type C to type A, you go into the router, and then now your whole home network can use your cell phone's, you know, cell phone connection instead, you know, until your ISP comes back.
That's cool.
It's awesome. And it's super easy to set up. Like, it's incredibly easy to set up in the back end of this. Of course, you have your power adapter, and I love to see dedicated power button. I just always like to see that. Sometimes you don't get that on certain devices. So dedicated power button, definitely nice to see that there. And again, that's all the ports that you are going to get. And again, no mounts on the back. I don't know. I feel like there should be some mounts there on the back. In terms of what they're running, like under the hood here, it has a quad core processor running at 2.6 gigahertz, 2 gigabytes of RAM, and 256 megabytes of flash storage for firmware and settings. It uses Broadcom's BCM 2726 and 2726.3 chips. So it's a BE19000 router. So it's going to give you max data rates of 1376 megabits per second on the 2.4 gigahertz band, 5764 megabits on the 5 gigahertz band, and 11,529 megabits on the 6 gigahertz band. So it's fast.
Very fast.
Yes. Very, very fast. Getting this thing set up is so simple. I don't think we've, you know, again, I don't review a lot of routers, but we're well past the days of like having to, I got to go in my computer. I got to type IP config, find the gateway. Then I got to type the gateway in. Different manufacturer has a different gateway. We don't have to do all that anymore. So you connect this, you can either connect to it wired or wireless. And then you can either do it on your browser. So you just go to asusrouter.com initially, and it will just pull right up and find the router, and you're brought to this screen. They also have an Asus router app that you can just do the exact same thing. When you open up the app, it detects that it's on the network, and you can do your setup that way. The setup is extremely easy. So you click on this, you know, create a network right here, or if you want to do an advanced configuration, but you can do all that later, obviously. When you click on create a network, it asks you to set up the SSIDs and passwords for the different bands, if you're naming them different things, or if you're just keeping one band, or one SSID for all three bands. You set that up, it goes through its thing, and then it will update the firmware. And I highly suggest you do that, because Asus is always adding new things into it. And then the back end, like as soon as you're done with that, you're brought into the back end, and it's extremely easy to see where everything is laid out. You know, you don't really have any...
They've had the same or very similar interface for a very long time. Because I had I've retired it multiple years ago, but it was almost identical looking. It's interesting to see that.
Yeah, it's very much the same. I think a lot of companies do that for continuity. So like if you're a previous Asus router user, you get the same thing. And at least for me,
again, it works well.
I'm old school and so are you. like this is easy to navigate. Maybe for the novice, it might not be. And they do have the, I'll show you the app too. The app is very easy to use. I think that's where like a lot of more novice people would configure the router. But again, you don't have to go into any of this. This you don't have to see this. Once you set up your SSID, you're good to go. You don't have to do anything. But everything is really easy to find there, which I like. One thing that's really, really cool about ASUS routers is their AI mesh feature. So if you do have a previous ASUS router, you can set it up and it becomes a node in the mesh network. You don't have to, it's not just an access point that you set up as like a direct access point. It acts as a node in a mesh network. So if you're closer to your secondary router, it's going to connect to that automatically. You don't have to. It's not like like my SSID is Think Computers. Like it's not Think Computers router 2 or anything like that. It's the same SSID, and it's a true mesh network. I had a little bit of an issue getting this set up. It wouldn't do it. It wouldn't initially set it up wirelessly for some reason. It wouldn't let me do it. But for those who do want to enable AI mesh and you do run into an issue, I'll save you the trouble because I had to go on forums and find this. But all you have to do is connect both WAN ports with an Ethernet cable, and then it will do it. And then you could just disconnect, and it's wireless, and you're good to go. But that's the issue that I had connecting these two. But I was able to connect, again, my old ASUS router with my new one. That's just going to give you more coverage, obviously, in your home if you have a larger home. I live in an apartment. I really don't need the coverage, but if you have a larger home, that's nice that you're able to do that. Another thing, some other things that are kind of built into this router, they have their AI protection, which is provided by Trend Micro. And for a lot of people, like you can just turn this on and it has like malicious sites blocking, a bunch of other stuff, infected devices. So like if it detects that an infected device comes on the network, it blocks that. It's good to have these type of security features on a router level rather than a per device level. It just makes it easier. And you just turn it on. You don't have to go into, again, you can go into a lot of these and really fine tune it. But for the novice, like I'm a very big novice when it comes to networking. You just turn it on. That's all you have to do. Right. It's really
just let it do its thing.
Yeah, you just let it do its thing. So that's really cool. Also, like I said, you can change the WAN config and you can set it to, you know, the 1 gig or the 10 gig if you did, again, want those downstream 10 gig LAN ports. And you can see the USB option in here. It's kind of hard to see, but it's right there. Again, if your ISP goes out, just connect your phone and now you have access to the internets when your ISP goes out, which is a game. And again, it's throughout your whole network. It's not like you're just working on your phone and then, or you set your phone as an access point, then everybody has to reconnect to the access point figure everything out. It's like, no, just connect to the router. I'll connect my phone and we're good to go. You know, everybody is good to go there. So
yeah, and you get the antennas of that router. You don't have to worry about the antenna of the phone itself.
And like the CPU power and like multi-connectivity, all that you're getting that. So I really like that. Here's some screenshots of the app. I have an iPhone, so it's the iOS app. It just shows you everything, you know, that's going on. It shows you your traffic in real time. You know, it shows your whole device list really easily, and then you can click into each one and do your settings there. Here's all the settings that we saw. Oops. Here's all, like I said, all the settings that you'd want to change. You can do that. You can set up parental controls really easily. Another thing that's really cool too is that like you can, this guest network stuff, if you click into that, it actually allows you to like have a QR code to give for the networks. Like sometimes we create our password and maybe it's our password for other things or whatever. You don't know what, you have a weird password that maybe you don't want people to know that that's your Wi-Fi password or something. All you have to do is go in here, you know, it's on your phone and it gives you a QR code. Of course, they just scan their QR code with their camera on their phone and now they can access your home network. And again, within that too, you can set up the guest network and you can even, it's super easy to be like, yeah, I only want you on the internet for an hour. So you can set like guest network to 1 hour. Yeah. You can do all the fun stuff. So it's really intuitive and easy to do. And again, there's the family profiles too. So you can set up all that quite easily on the router too. And again, super easy to do on the app. And then you can also like prioritize certain things, right? So if you want to prioritize gaming, you could do that. Or streaming, like you can prioritize streaming, work from home, all that kind of stuff you can prioritize. So it's going to prioritize that traffic. And again, it's just a one-click setting. I'm very novice, whatever. I'm not this big networking guy. So it's really nice that I can just one-click and have everything prioritized for me. I don't really have to think. So I really, really like the app. Everything works really easily. And again, even the back end of the router, if you're doing it through the browser, is very easy too. Now, when it does come to performance testing, here is the layout of my apartment. Here's where I had the router, the square there. And then the X is where I did all of my tests. So this would be like the same room. And then when we look in the test, this is one wall. And this is two walls. And if we look at our performance here in the same room at 6 gigahertz, the 6 gigahertz band, we're getting 2.6 gigabits per second, which Ryan said that's really fast when I asked him last week.
Well, I mean, you have to caveat it with you don't have a Wi-Fi 7 device to test with, right?
No, this is a Wi-Fi 7. This is Wi-Fi
7. Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still like,
yeah, that's incredibly fast. And if you look at 5 gigahertz, you're going down to 1820. And then, of course, the old 2.4 gigahertz, you're going to 92.7. So big difference. And again, you can see the one wall and then two walls. And it's kind of interesting to see that 5 gigahertz does give you just a little bit better coverage than 6 gigahertz does. So, you know, but overall the performance, I mean, this is the fastest router that I've ever tested. To give you an example, the Wi-Fi 6 routers that I tested in this same type of test would get right around 1,000, and we're getting 1820 on 5 gigahertz and 2640 on 6 gigahertz. So very, very fast. So I really, really like that. I also did like the AI mesh test to give you an example. So here's our results in that third room where I did put the second router. And without AI mesh at 5 gigahertz, because that's all that router is available to do. It can't do 6 gigahertz because it's an older router. But at 5 gigahertz, you can see that it's 672 megabits per second. And then at 2.4 gigahertz, it's 32.5 megabytes per second. Enable AI mesh, exact same placement, exact same test. We're at 1,470 megabits per second and 132 megabits per second at 2.4 gigahertz. So
nice.
Much faster speeds. And again, it's like if you have an older Asus router, why not just enable
it. Leave it enabled and get some extra coverage.
Now, like I said, the biggest caveat to this router is the price. All Wi-Fi 7 routers, high-end ones, are going to be around this price, and that price is $629.99. So it's not cheap. You have to consider some of the features that you are getting with this. I think the two biggest ones, of course, is going to be the Wi-Fi 7 speed and all that comes with it, but also dual 10 gig LAN. You know, for the people that do have those higher end motherboards that have 10 gig LAN, like my motherboard here, which is not necessarily brand new, but it's a Crosshair, so it has 10 gig LAN. So I have 10 gig into the router, which is great. So you're getting that. You're getting, of course, AI mesh. You're getting the AI protection. It is a high-end router at a high-end price. But if you want the fastest speeds possible, especially if you're somebody who's not plugging directly in, especially if you're a gamer or something like that, this is going to give you the fastest throughput that's currently available. If you have a motherboard that has Wi-Fi 7 or if you have a laptop that has Wi-Fi 7, it's going to give you the fastest throughput. So,
That's sweet. Yeah, the only thing I would like... I like the dual 10 gig, but I'd almost wish it was like a single 10 gig and then like a couple 2.5s or something, right? Because with this, you're like, I don't know. It's just some of that flexibility, right?
Yeah.
Because you're limited on the number of devices with that high of bandwidth. I don't know. It's still cool to see multiple 10 gig ports. So.
Yeah. I mean, having the last Asus router I had the 2.5, and I think it was only a single 2.5. This gives you dual 10 gig. I didn't even think I had a motherboard that had 10 gig LAN. I didn't. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, wait, this Crosshair board does have 10 gigs. So we're plugging directly in with this thing. So,
yeah.
So it's one of the best Wi-Fi 7 routers out there. It's just, if you want to spend the price, just like any of this new tech, it's going to be very expensive, at least for the time being. But if you're somebody who's running on Wi-Fi 6, not even 6E, so Wi-Fi 6 doesn't even give you the 6 gigahertz band. That's only Wi-Fi 6E. So if you're on Wi-Fi 6 or anything below that, this is going to be a much needed upgrade, especially if you are buying newer devices that have Wi-Fi 7, whether it's a phone, whether it's a new laptop, or again, your new PC that has Wi-Fi 7. You want to take advantage. This is something that you're going to need to invest in for your home network. But just like all routers, it's something that you invest in, and then you probably don't upgrade
for quite a while.
Yeah, for you don't upgrade for a long time. So you think about that price over at least 5 years, if not more than that. So yeah, check out the review. Like cool. I said, I had a lot of fun reviewing it, and I learned a lot too. So that's always a good thing when that happens. We'll move on from there to Case Mod Friday. Of course, that's where we feature a build or mod that's been completed in the Case Mod community. And this week we have Project Venom. And as you can guess, it's Venom themed. This one's from Quantum Rig Designs. And I think this is pretty cool. What do you think my favorite part of this build is? If you were to guess, knowing me. If we go through this and look, what do you think?
You usually like frosted tubing, but
yeah,
okay. I was curious if you would say the same thing. Yeah, I like that like webbing treatment, right, of the paint that they've given to the case and the tubing. It's cool.
Yeah, I think that this is not something you see often on the tubing. Oh, no. So I thought that's why I picked this one for this week, because I thought it was just really, really cool. I'm not necessarily like a massive Venom fan or anything like that. But it goes with the Venom theme, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a ThermalTake case. This is their view. I forget what it is, but it's a ThermalTake case. And again, just CPU water cooled, not the GPU. Pretty simple GPU there. But I just think we don't see it enough. I don't think we see this paint that on
design.
We don't see paint on the tubing all that much. We see frosted tubes, but we don't see the paint. So it's pretty cool. It's cool to see the paint. I'm a big fan. So shout out to Quantum Rig Designs. And of course, we have a full section of Case Mod Friday build. So if you want to check them out, we have a ton there. Also, a quick reminder that we are giving away a Galax Hall of Fame Ace M2 gaming mouse. This is their really nice gaming mouse, actually. 13 days left, just like all of our contests. This is run on Gleam. You enter the widget and you're good to go. Super easy to enter. Like I said, 13 days left. Get your entry in. Really easy to do. And of course, we want to get back to you guys. So get in on that contest. That brings us to Ryzen. Like I said, last week we had the mid-range of Ryzen 9000 series, or the reviews come out. This week we have the high-end, which is the Ryzen 9 9950X and 9900X reviews. We didn't review them, but there are a ton of reviews out there. The videos are out there. People aren't impressed.
No, I didn't get a chance to read any of them today, unfortunately.
So
what's the gist of it? Last week's were.
Yeah, very much the same. I know some people were like, at least it's not Intel. which isn't necessarily a great thing. The 9950X, of course, is the newest high end. It's gonna give Currently, it's going to give the best multi-thread performance out of any CPU. It beats the 14900K at multi-thread performance, but it's $650. And at that price, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. The 14900K is $100 cheaper. You have, if you're gaming, you want to get a Ryzen 7000 or 5000 X3D part for far, far less. It uses less power, and it doesn't get as hot, and same thing with a 9900X. It's just the price for what else AMD is offering as far as their, like, if you're a gamer, this doesn't make any sense. Yes, it has great gaming performance, but you're much better off with a 7800X3D, which is, how much is that? Let's see. Go on Amazon right now.
And the thing is, I'm seeing like the 5800X3D beating it.
Yeah, so, all the X, right? Yeah. So if you, 370, yeah,
right?
Yeah, so right on Amazon right now, the Ryzen 7 7800X3D is $366. So essentially $300 cheaper.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if you're a gamer, stick with that 7800.
And again, if you're somebody who needs multi-threaded workloads, there are a lot of other options too that are less expensive that are right around the same type of performance. Sure. And again, even the 14900K is $100 cheaper. You know, for the gamer, you can spend that extra $300 and put that towards your graphics card, which is going to vastly improve your gaming performance.
Sure.
Just the price doesn't make sense. The IPC uplift is again like 5%. It's not a lot. Prices just, AMD put out such a good product before. It's hard for people to want to use, like, and again, they kind of segmented it. Like that X3D part, right? That's specifically made for gamers. So no gamer
in there is even going to touch this.
Yeah. So it's like, they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit, because with Intel, they just have that high-end part that's good at gaming.
Right, right. You don't have to buy the gaming-specific 3D part, right? You can just get their high-end, and it's going to be great for it. Yeah, that does kind of stink that AMD does have that little difference there, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think it's done great for them, and it's helped them with their marketing, especially like, but... with this launch, you can see that they kind of did shoot them in the foot a little bit, because it's like, why would I pay $650 when a processor that's $366 is better at gaming?
Yeah.
You know, and obviously later on, we're going to see the X3D parts from the Ryzen 9000 series, but that's not here yet. $650 for a processor is a lot.
Oh yeah.
You know, even with the great multi-threaded performance, it's just not enough. It's not enough. It's not compelling enough for a lot of people, right?
No, not at all. Yeah, it is kind of disappointing.
And the platform is very much the same as well, right? So,
right.
You know, you're still getting Gen 5 storage, you're still getting DDR5, albeit it's going to be a little bit, it will support faster memory, but that's not enough for somebody to upgrade, right? And you'll get some of the other things, like the newer motherboards will have Wi-Fi 7, blah, 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 but it's not like when we went from, you know, like when AMD implemented Gen 5 across the board and DDR5, like, that's when you want to upgrade, because your storage, when you do your CPU upgrade, your storage is getting an immense upgrade as well. Sure. Right. I don't know if you had any other thoughts.
No, I need to read into some of those when I get a chance. But I mean, it was kind of expecting this, right? We knew they would be better than last week's parts, obviously. But the percentage wise over last gen Ryzen it just isn't there, unfortunately. So,
and like, let me
kind of a bummer, but like you said, it's not Intel. You don't have to worry about your CPU frying itself.
And the thing is like even a 7950X is 516, right? Let me bring this up real quick.
So, old man asks, are we talking 9950X? Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. 9950X. But even like the 9900X is 500, right? And that's only 12 core, 24 thread. And that is right around the same price, like 516 is the 7950X, and you're getting 16 core, 32 thread. So, like, both parts are not. They're not helping them. Like, it's just not. No.
I mean, they've got to come out with something. Unfortunately, this is what it was, and it's not what we
now want. I do have to say, and we'll wait till the end of the podcast to talk about some of the other stuff about these. But yeah, they're just, if you're a gamer, you should get an X3D part. If you're somebody that needs multi-threaded workloads, are you buying a more non-workstation type chip, and are you spending more money on like the CPU, or should you be spending money on GPU power to run your multi-threaded stuff through the GPUs, right?
Yeah, or should you be looking at the like Threadripper platform, right, or something similar that can maybe take more memory or give you more lanes for your workload type, right? If you need,
yeah, those added cards. It just doesn't. Like, again, the X3D parts are just, like, they're priced good. The platform is great.
Well, and that's the kind of the viewpoint we take a lot here is, like, that gamer, right? So we're a lot of times most interested in that gamer part in gaming performance. So, yeah, for some people, these chips, like you said, for a multi-threaded workload that's outside the gaming realm, these things are going to be great. They're going to fly through your workloads, right? It's just not the case on the games as far as like iterative performance increases.
Yeah, and the performance increase over the previous, while it does obviously beat it, it's not by a ton. And right, again, if you look at last gen, again, the 7950X right now is $516. So that's a basically $135 more, you know, more for 5%.
Yeah. Probably not worth it.
Yeah. So, old man in the chat says he had the 3900X, never took advantage of all the cores. And I don't think a lot of people are. And I think, again, AMD really made it clear with the X3D parts, like, hey, if you're a gamer, get this. You know, this is going to be great for gaming. It's going to give you that uplift in performance at a very reasonable price, because all they are very, especially now, 5,000 X3D parts and even 7,000 X3D parts are reasonably priced right now, especially like that 7,800 X3D is a great price. And again, why spend more money on the higher end CPU that offers maybe the same performance gaming when you can take that $300 savings and put it towards a better GPU, which is going to, again, give you better gaming performance.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on it. I think people are disappointed, but again, people can just say, well, it's not Intel, at least currently. Yep. So I think that's the gist of it, at least for me, from everything that I read. We will talk about Intel because it just seems like Intel's just going through it. They're just, it's not good. So Intel got hit with a shareholder lawsuit. So shareholder lawsuits, job cuts, and the dividend slashed the stock by 26% in one day. And it's gone down. Their share price has gone down 60% for the year. And the lawsuit's a class action from shareholders who are not happy with the performance of the company at all. They're just going through it.
Yeah, they really are. You lay off that big of a chunk of employees, and
yeah,
you know, that doesn't look great.
Yeah.
And you kill your dividends that you've had for like 10 years. Back to back hits, and yeah, your stock is going to tumble.
And I think the investors, you know, thought Intel would be rebounding by now, and they are definitely not. And obviously all of those security issues aren't helping Intel at all either. So yeah, class action, stocks dropping. What's going on? Then Intel did this, I think it was today or yesterday. Intel a while back bought into a stake into ARM. They dropped that stake, like I said, yesterday or today, amid their restructuring and again, financial issues. They sold their 1.18 million shares of ARM, which is worth $147 million. Of course, this is part of their strategy to get the financial structure of the company in line, you know what I mean? Like I said, the stock price is down 60% this year. They've had the job cuts. They need to start being on the positive end of things. So this is just part of just dropping stuff to get their balance sheet kind of back in order.
Well, it's not like they don't have money. Like this isn't one of those things where it's like these couple items is just going to like Intel's going to be gone next year in the next 5 years, right? Intel has money, and I have no doubt that they're like gonna like push through this and be successful again, right? It's just right in the last, you know, like you said, since the beginning of the year, that huge 60-some% drop, they'll pick it back up. I know they will. Like,
okay, so you're telling people, you're saying you're not a financial advisor,
this is not
you're
a saying, financial advice,
right, but you should buy now because it's gonna go back up. That's what you're saying.
I mean, sure,
okay, I'll take your advice on that one, maybe. But yeah, so that's what's going on with Intel. Not good news. Talking about the Intel CPU issues, we've talked about it previously. Asus and MSI both put out new BIOS updates to resolve the instability issues on Intel CPUs. So I think by now, when this was posted last week, but I think by now, almost all motherboard manufacturers did put out the BIOS update. So you should, if you're running at least 13th or 14th gen processors, update your BIOS so you don't have those issues or have to be worrying in the back of your head how to do it, like a, you know, or anything like that. You don't want it to be like, just like look over your computer, be like,
yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't like fix CPUs that may have already been damaged or
yeah,
maybe showing signs of damage, but in a new build, right? You get the newest BIOS and the CPU and you should be all right.
Yeah,
not have to worry about it.
So. Yeah, so update your BIOS if you have a 13th or 14th gen processor. Interesting, at the same time, security exploit came out for AMD. So they're also in this whole security exploit thing. So this is the exploit called Sync Close. I don't know a ton about it, but the interesting thing is that this AMD said they're committed to patching, or they issued patches for 5000 and 7000 series processors. So again, update your BIOS if you have those, but it excluded anything from Ryzen 3000 below, and all of those can be exploited with this exploit. So I don't know why they didn't. Maybe it's coming later.
You still have to have like a compromised system in order to exploit this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of stinks at some of those older parts, right? Because I've got like my home server that I, you know, retired the CPU from my main system and put it in my home server. Well, it's a 3800X, so I'm not going to get that vulnerability patched. And like I have an 1800X still as well that I use off and on. It's not going to get patched for this, unfortunately.
I mean, you would hope that eventually, but. Wasn't there some issue too with, I think we had talked about it, where because of the wide support of AM4, that they can't, there's just not enough space to have updates on the BIOS. Wasn't that a thing we talked about?
Oh, like it's such a wide compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember talking about that.
I thought we had talked
about it. Makes sense. Like,
Yeah.
You can only support X number of chips. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if that was the thing, but yeah, so that was an interesting story that came out this week as well. So lots of security issues with CPUs. And then NVIDIA's, I wouldn't call it super shady, but it's what they plan on doing. We did talk about NVIDIA could be releasing, and they probably are going to be releasing or re-releasing the RTX 4070 with GDDR6 memory. So the original RTX 4070 came with GDDR6X memory, which is faster. This one is going to have GDDR6, and it appears, we don't know yet, not confirmed, but it appears that there's not going to be any rebranding or like anything. So essentially, you will lose performance over a GDDR6X version. You're not going to know the difference. The boxes are all going to look the same. So you don't know which one you're getting unless until you install it and open up, what's it called? GPU-Z, you don't know which one's which.
That's no good.
And they're probably going to be the same price.
Probably.
So
that is shady. Like, yeah, it's almost a bait and switch. If you don't designate it, is it not?
I mean, it's a different product.
It'll have a different SKU or whatever, you know, product name and designation model and everything. But this is just not cool. I mean, hopefully they continue making GDDR6X cards along with the non, right? Because if you want that extra performance, that just adds confusion to the market, unfortunately. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a thing going forward where like they re-release a card with just like crappier. We've seen it. We've seen them
it's do going it the wrong times. Way, though. You could re-release the card, but make it better, not worse.
Yeah. I don't know, but that's something that NVIDIA is doing here. So watch out for that if you are in the market. But again, I don't know how you would tell either. You know what I mean?
Until you buy it, unless like the, you know, unless the packaging notates it on the back, like what type of memory it is in the specs table or something.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's going to be the case. Old man in the chat said, didn't the 3060 have two different memory versions? Yeah, I believe those at least were different size memory. Like the capacity was different in those. I'm not really sure. I don't remember. We definitely talked about it. I remember talking about it. So
yeah,
we have seen that, and it just gets confusing to the consumer, especially when like it's a decent amount of memory capacity difference, like 8 gig and 16 gig or whatever. I mean, that's a big difference in how much VRAM you have. So this one's, you're not going to notice a whole lot of difference, obviously, but it is just like, you're giving us the crappier memory here, like, you know. So that's something to look out for. This is something that I thought Ryan would think is cool. I think it's super cool, very expensive, but pretty awesome. AlphaCool has come out with a case, Apex Pro Skeleton. So it's sort of like this open air sort of case that is mostly made of carbon. It looks badass.
It reminds me of that InWin case. I can't think of the name now. The something D, wasn't it? Like the
yeah,
one of their premier cases.
Yeah, and it looks like the motherboard tray is even made out of this carbon fiber.
I wonder how much it weighs with it being that light, because you start adding those liquid cooling components and they start getting heavy. But with this, looks to be like aluminum and carbon fiber. So yeah, it's, I don't know. This is cool. I like it. It's a very specific person that's going to buy this because it's not going to be cheap, right? I think it's like $650 or it's something like
$650. That. Here's the thing. It's $650, and the one that's $650 doesn't have any of the built-in water cooling parts.
Oh, man.
The one that has the built-in this right here, which is the reservoir and what do you call this? Pump. Like a pump, reservoir pump and like, I guess,
distribution.
Yeah. Yeah. That one, and I don't know if there's any, the big differences between the two, but that's the big difference, or, you know, that's the big difference. That one's almost $1,000. If we go to AlphaCool's website and
yeah.
So this one's, you know, 649 euros. I believe that's euros, right? And this one's 999 euros. And again, the difference is it just appears as if that's the difference, right? Because if you look at them, so that's the one that's 900.
Yeah, you get the vertical bracket, you get the...
Oh, you get a couple different things. Yeah, you get like the accent bracket. Yeah, you get a couple different... But that appears to be the difference for $300, which kind of makes... Like, you would expect a big res pump combo bracket. I mean, that's going to be at least...
Yeah.
And like these extra pieces of carbon and stuff, I don't know. But that's expensive for a case, but it obviously... Certain person in mind for this, but I do really, really like this design. I think it's super cool. Again, like you said, super light, and just some different kind of industrial looking design. I'm a fan of it. So shout out to Alpha Cool for that one. Really, really cool. So talking about things that are insanely crazy expensive, and these are typically so overpriced. It's crazy how much people pay for these. But Apple is going to do a redesigned Mac Pro,
okay.
And redesign Mac Studio next year, featuring the M4. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with the Mac Pro. Yeah, the Mac Pro is the
cheese grater. Yeah,
cheese. Like one redesign. So what are they going to do? They're going to change the cheese grater. What are we going to get? Because we had the garbage can. Remember the garbage can? Yeah. We had the garbage can.
Yeah.
And then we had the cheese grater. And I think like the high end configurations of the cheese grater were like $32,000.
And then you could like add the wheels and they were like $4,000 or something.
Yeah, something crazy. So, and it's going to be interesting to see what they choose. If they're going to use their own chip, it's going to be an M4. Yep. Is there going to be like multiple M4s? Because, That'd be cool.
They've done it. Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time they've had a multi-chip.
And what graphics are we going to see in this? I would never pay the price, and I think the price is outrageous for the Mac Pro. But it's so cool to see what they do and the configurations. I remember the garbage can had dual ATI. I think back then it was like ATI too, before it was AMD, but it was like dual, or no, it might have been AMD, but it was dual, like, AMD graphics cards in there. They were doing some really cool stuff. So it'd be pretty cool to see what they do with the Mac Pro. Mac Studios, it's cool because it's small and compact, and but I always like to see what they do with the Mac Pro.
It's fun to just go on the configurator and just be like, click the top option for everything.
yeah, but you would think it's going to have like all of the fastest stuff, right? So you're going to get at least like that M4 is going to be fast. Maybe again, multi CPU configurations, multi GPU configurations. And again, who are they going to go with? Are they going to go with NVIDIA? Are they going to go with, AMD? And then the storage configurations too, like how much NVMe storage? And it should be the fastest storage available. How much memory can you throw in this thing? At least 128 gigs on, if not more than that. So it'd be, and again, I want to see the, let's see what dumb design they come up
with. Like,
I think that's
you got to look around the kitchen, figure out what, like, the toaster, it's going to look like an air fryer or something,
Yeah. Or they keep the same design, but I think they would change it just to,
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. But I thought that was pretty interesting to see that we have a new one coming and it's going to be outrageous in price. Talk about things that should have come out, which I really think it should have already come out based on the popularity of the Nintendo Switch and all of these PC gaming handhelds. It does seem as if Microsoft is working on an Xbox gaming handheld. It's going to be a competitor to the Nintendo Switch and likely the Nintendo Switch 2. It's just such a popular market now. Again, with all the Windows-based gaming consoles, you would think there should be an Xbox one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if anybody would do it, obviously it has to be Xbox and Microsoft, like, to do a gaming handheld.
Yeah, we've seen one from everybody else, right? We've seen multiple from Sony over the years. We've got, Nintendo's had the Switch and the Switch OLED, and then the Wii U even had the, kind of the portable option. Yeah, it'd be cool to see one from Microsoft. Because they've got experience with like the Zune, right? So they've done a portable device, and they've got the Xbox experience, years and years of that. So, and you know, the Surface as well. You think of all those devices that could lead into a product that fits this need.
And again, you would think it's gonna like it can just run Windows, because yeah, isn't Xbox a Windows machine?
Technically, yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah,
you could do something similar, right, with a skin over it, and like take advantage of your streaming platform, and like,
and also like the compatibility of like, I can use my Xbox to stream to this, and vice versa, and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be like, when have we gotten excited? Like, maybe it's because I was like more into consoles when I was younger, but like, you know, when Microsoft and Xbox and it was E3 and they showed off their new hardware and everybody was like super impressed. Oh, yeah. When has that happened recently?
Well, I think we're just not in that group, right? We're in that PC group, and we just don't care as much about the console. Those people are out there for sure. They like are excited about that next generation console every time one comes out.
Yeah. I think the time between the consoles has gotten longer.
Oh yeah.
I'm
just thinking in my head, my neighbor, right? He's a console guy, and you know, they've got a PS5 and had a PS4, and he's definitely that guy that will be more excited about that console launch. And it was funny because we were talking about GTA and stuff, and like he and I were both surprised. He was like, well, you know, that game was available on PS3, GTA 5 was, and Xbox 360. Like, that's so wild that game's been out that long. Anyhow, that's kind of a side tangent here, but
yeah, so like I said, I would hope to see something cool. You like, even if you're not going to use the hardware, it is really cool to see really interesting hardware. We've seen it with all the gaming handhelds. Like, I'm excited when I saw the ROG Ally, the MSI claw that we got to play with at CES. Like, it's really cool to see this tech, so it would be awesome to see you know, Microsoft come out with a gaming handheld, Xbox, obviously. So we'll see if that happens. But that was our, news went fast.
Yeah, it went pretty quick. For as many stories as we had, it went faster than I was expecting.
Oh, we skipped one. That's why.
What'd you skip?
We skipped the Ryzen 5 story. That's why.
Oh, the 5500X. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ryzen 5000 series has been out for a very long time.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the Ryzen 5000 series X3D parts have been out for a very long time. If you guys don't know, Ryzen 5000 series is the old AM4. It is not AM5. So you would have to have an AM4 board to run any Ryzen 5000 series parts.
Calling my system old.
Yeah. I mean, I'm running a 5950X too, so it's like...
I know.
So, an interesting filing came on from the EEC. This is where you have to, you know, if you're shipping something, you got to put in what's in there. And an interesting thing came up. I know it's hard to see, but this says AMD Ryzen 5 5500 X3D. Of course, the highest end Ryzen X3D part isn't it the Ryzen 5 5600 X3D? That's the highest one, I believe. So this would be even more budget friendly, 6-core with, of course, the 3D V cache. This could be the again AMD shooting themselves in the foot with new products. This would be even. How much is? Let's see. Let me go to Amazon real quick.
Well, like the 5800 X3D, yeah, it's like $340 right now, I think, something like that. So you're gonna have to be close to $300.
So the 50s, yeah, there's not a 50. There's a 5700 X3D. The 5700 X3D is $207.
$207
on Amazon with a list price of $249. So this would be sub $200 part X3D, perfect for gaming. You still get everything that you're going to get on that X570 platform, which is still super fast, and you get all of that connectivity, and it's 6-core, 12-thread.
Yeah, 6-core, 12-thread, probably what, a 65 watt part?
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
And again,
throw it in with like a budget AMD card or something.
Yeah, you have a
really, really nice affordable gaming PC.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that like this is only coming out now, and why is it? Do they have extra 5700 X3Ds that just like aren't selling, and they're gonna cut, you know, or like the yield wasn't good? They just have like, I don't.
Right.
It's interesting.
Some chips that just wouldn't.
And again, especially it's interesting that it's coming out now. Like the 5000 series came out what? Three years ago,
because my system, I've had my 5800X for almost 2 years, and you know, the 5000 series had been out for like a year or more when the 5800X came out. So
I'm excited for this. I think, like, you know, we see all these videos of like all the whatever dollar PC build, like gaming build and all that. Like, you could build an awesome gaming PC with, again, this has to be sub $200. And then again, you can get, you know, like X570 boards are cheap, because again, we're on the newer generation. DDR4 is cheap. Like, you know, you're going to be in a good spot for a gaming PC with this chip. And again, no word from AMD if this is actually coming out. Maybe it was some weird typo, but seems odd for that to be a typo, but we'll see what happens.
The EEC filing, right?
Yeah,
so maybe it's only going to show up in certain markets.
Yeah, could be.
I don't know.
Yeah, but sub $200 for a gaming part that's going to perform well, I'm all about it. Definitely all about that. So that is our news for the week, since we decided to skip it. We didn't skip any other ones, did we? No, we're good. Okay, just making sure we didn't skip any other stories. coming up next week, super excited for this. I have another QD OLED monitor from Gigabyte. This one is the Aorus
49-inch
CO49DQ. This is a 49-inch super ultra wide. Why does it do that? So like I can't see the top. Like if I go like that, there's nothing there. But if I pull in, it shows.
Oh, you're trying to see just the monitor. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a 49-inch super ultra wide, as you can see. Just super excited to test this. And I love QD OLEDs, man. And Gigabyte has done a really good job with their OLED care, so you don't have to worry about burn-in and some of the other stuff that you're going to get. So I'm excited to test this out and tell you guys all about that. Old man in the chat said, Newegg had the AMD Ryzen 5 5600 GT with 16 gigabytes of RAM for $109 a few months ago. That's a good deal. Yeah, I think, like I said, as in enthusiasts are not necessarily that excited about Ryzen 9000 series, and as we're kind of in that point where like we're not getting new GPUs anytime soon, prices are going to steadily continue to go down a little bit as we get closer to holiday season, so that those Black Friday sales are going to be amazing, I think, for PCs. So definitely stay tuned for that. That brings us to our question of the week. We have a question, and this one has to do with the Ryzen 9000 series release and even Intel releases and things like that. As enthusiasts, do we expect too much from CPU releases?
Maybe, yeah. Like, because you just think of how like fast we get these refreshes. I mean, we're getting them every 2 years, essentially. You're getting a brand new generation of processors from both AMD and Intel, with refreshes along the way, right? X3D parts,
yeah,
KS parts from Intel, you know, things like that. Expecting too much, I think, like, it's not realistic to expect a 20 to 25% performance increase. I don't think like 5 feels low. 10 to 15. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like around the 10 to 15 mark. I think too, if you think about it, and this like question had me thinking too. Okay. So on the Intel side, the 14900K, they had to push everything they could out of that silicon to get that speed to run it the way it is. And if you did not run it stock, if you even tried to overclock it, so much power went into it. It got so hot. And even in general, it got so hot because it was pushing so much that you needed at least a 360 millimeter AIO, if not a 420 on there. And with Ryzen 9000 series, they kind of cut the power down, but you don't get the performance, like, right? So if all the reviews, a lot of them that I saw on the Ryzen 9000 series chips, like if you unlock the power level, you get a lot better performance. But if you keep it at its stock, it's, you know. So I think we're at that point. It's like, okay, do we want to push it and get to that 15% IPC uplift generation over generation? But you have temperature issues, you have stability issues. I mean, Intel is having crazy issues with the voltages and causing problems. So do we go that route where we do get the 15% IPC uplift? That's what enthusiasts want, I feel. Or do we go this route where, like, yes, the cooling's under control, the TDPs are much lower, and you don't have to worry about stability as much, especially if you're an enthusiast. So maybe you are overclocking, maybe you're unlocking power levels, stuff like that, right? But then you only get 5% IPC uplift. Like, is there a happy medium?
Right. Like, I think it may be too much shooting yourself in the foot, but like if AMD was upfront about like, hey, for this generation, we're not shooting for 15 to 20% uplift, right? We're like, we're going to go for a 5 to 10%, but we're going to save you a bunch of thermal overhead and power draw, right? Like, we're going for efficiency while still giving you more performance, right?
If you
like hit that from the start, that might be okay, but then you may have your investors going, no, you need to be like pushing the line.
Think that's the thing. I think that's when they kind of were like, yeah, like the 7800 X3D is going to still outperform these new processors. People were like, what? Like, that's not normal.
Wait, what? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're in a tough spot because, yeah, somebody like you, the water cooler, the person who's doing their own custom loop, they don't care about temperatures because they're going to keep it under control themselves. But the normal user, maybe somebody who's running an AIO, they're like, wait, I have this $249 AIO 360 that, why is it not cooling off my processor? You know?
Yeah.
And why do I have stability issues maybe if I'm playing a game or something? So, and again, old man in the chat, he said, Intel flew too close to the sun. I mean, yeah, like when I was like looking at a 14900K, I was like, why is this so hot? You know, and then they had to raise the max temperature, you know, the TJ Max on the processor too. And you're like, and for somebody who's reviewed processors for so long, you're like, wait, this is like,
this scary. Doesn't seem, this is not good.
Yeah. So we do. And again, I think you're right. I think if Intel really was like, or AMD was really like, hey, we're dropping down TDPs, we're working on efficiency because we can't push these crazy high speeds without getting efficiency under control first, but they didn't really do that. So again, all of us enthusiasts, we come with the expectation of 10 to 15% and we're only getting 5.
Right. Well, you know, like how much, like what could improvements to software and OS multi-threading do for like improving the performance of these, right? Like that's going to take a lot of work on that side of things, but like to get more out of it, because we still have like apps that just don't use, like I got 16 cores sitting here ready to go, and like take advantage of them, like let me use all of it.
Yeah.
I may not need that like faster speeds and, you know, all that extra headroom if you'd let me use all my cores and the full potential of my machine.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's an interesting conundrum. And again, we've seen the bad effects of it with what's going on with Intel. But you're also seeing the bad effects of it. What's going to happen with AMD? I already saw reports of what's the website called? It's like Mind something. It's like the German big German retailer, something Mind. They said they only sold like a handful of Ryzen 9000 series processors, and they're like the new egg of, okay, you know, of Germany. So that's not good. So maybe both AMD and Intel are going to take a hit for a little bit until they figure this sort of thing out. I think that's the biggest thing. I believe it's called Mind Factory. I think that's what it's called. Mindfactory.de. I think that's it. But anyways, yeah, kind of an interesting thing to think about when it comes to CPUs. Again, as enthusiasts, we want the speed and we want the IPC uplift, but that comes at the cost of having, you need better cooling. If you're overclocking, you need water cooling. You know, and again, you run the risk of permanently damaging your CPU now too.
Yeah.
So yeah, guys, that is going to be it for the podcast. I feel we flew through this. We are at an hour, but we flew through this. Ryan is going to be gaming over on Twitch. I might join in. We'll see. But playing some Apex Legends. Of course, the new season started last week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so new season of Apex started last week. Ryan's
that new map ahead. Was wild.
Yeah, new map is crazy. Nah, I might jump in and play. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, so Ryan's going to be over there, twitch.tv/thinkcomputers. Of course, thanks everybody for coming out for the live stream. We had Jonathan and Old Man in the live chat. And of course, we appreciate everybody that listens later. And we will see everybody next week.